The BGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 497, recorded on March 19th, 2018.
Welcome to the 497th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 330th edition of the Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So, Scott, what have you been playing? And let me guess, have you been playing Ys?
No, not yet. They haven't released that one. There's apparently a new Ys release coming.
Yeah, let's not spoil the. But you did complete 2 and 3.
Yes.
What are you playing now?
Other than that, I've been playing Minecraft because I've been building Final Fantasy crystal rooms, and I finished the Earth, Fire, and Air one, and I made it in my own kind of version and interpretation of what that room would look like, and so I'm having fun building in Minecraft right now.
Yeah, I will say, have you been playing Civ 6?
Yeah.
Because I'm currently in a game in which I finally went to online speed, and now I've adjusted. So I'm and you know, I didn't realize how good England was.
I guess certain things seem to work differently on different speeds, but I think I've always found England to be a good Civ to play.
How about you, TJ?
I've been power leveling in Monster Hunter World this week, for most of this last week. There's some new DLC content coming on Thursday already. They're adding one of the more, I guess, iconic monsters of the series, Devil Joe, who is known as the Scaly Pickle.
You know, thinking of Spore, I was about to think, penis monster.
You weren't far off. He's the Scaly Pickle, who is also a dinosaur.
And have you and Scott actually played yet together?
No,
co-op in that game for a reason.
I know. I'm a loner. I'm a renegade without a cause.
Mm. I'm kind of that way too.
have either of you ever played Dragon's Dogma?
I think I have.
Yes.
Because that reminds me of how you can rent out your companion to other people. You know, what's it called? They can say, "Oh, we're going to use your guy." You know, and you get bonuses for when people use your person, when you use your companion or your worker. I won't say slave, but sometimes it feels like that. Here, you do this, and you don't have any say in the matter. Go.
There is sort of a similar component to Monster Hunter, they're both games made by Capcom, but in Monster Hunter, you have when you're playing the game solo. You have a little cat friend called a Palico, and you can equip him with cute suits and weaponry and level him up and give him gadgets.
What a thought and you to have Mega Man instead of a cat.
You can. You can get one. That's one of the suits. You can get a suit of voxel Mega Man. You can basically 8-bit voxel Mega Man. You can dress him like that.
I still think you should have Frank West.
Who knows? They might eventually. They've been doing a lot of crossover content. They had a Ryu and Sakura uniform, and they've had a connection with they had a thing with Horizon Zero Dawn where you could dress your cat friend in it like a robot in that theme.
Didn't they have a crossover with Final Fantasy 15, or am I thinking of a different game?
They just put Noctis in Tekken 7. Final Fantasy 15. But the thing I was getting at was if you're out in the wild and you're not on a particular mission, you can sometimes find other people's Palicos and the gear that they've equipped for them, which is
It's not Final Fantasy crossover until they use a Moogle for your cat.
Awesome. God, that would be great.
It would.
but you can find other people's Palicos out in the wild, and that's sort of similar to that That servant system in Dragon's Dogma.
I don't think they'll be. I don't think Dragon Monster Hunter will be hardcore until you start hunting and skinning and dismembering chocobos.
Oh my god! I mean, you sort of did that in Final Fantasy 15. You could make chocobo drumsticks. Literally, that was one of the things you could cook. You could cook chocobo.
Yeah, but you didn't have to hunt them.
You're right. They were killed in captivity, which is even worse.
So, I stopped playing Need for Speed Payback. I was getting along in the game, you know, and I was basically paying it to see how it was and also to get achievements. But at a certain point of the game, I had a 260 rated racing car, and I was doing an individual race with a 239. So really, I should have been wiping the mat, and I was. But here's the thing. They're allowed to take you out, but you can't take them out. And after four times of doing that, I silently took the game out of the hard drive, put it in the sleeve, put it in the envelope, and just shipped it back to Gamefly. It broke me. I just got that pissed off, and I didn't want to deal with it anymore.
That's really unfair.
Yeah. I've been playing Pure Farming, something that did you check it out at last year's E3? Because it was at Focus Home. No, it was at Techland.
No, I didn't check it out. I'm not into that kind of game.
Oh, well, I'm not either, but, you know, if you're going to play Stardew Valley, you might as well go all the way. So, the game is as slow-moving as you might expect. I mean, part of the game, of course, is taking your tractor, attaching the combine, and going up and down your field, harvesting the wheat or whatever plants that you have. And, you know, a lot of the mundane stuff, oh, I got to buy some equipment, oh, I got to have the cow's milk, oh, I got to make food for the cows and the chickens and all that stuff. And I think I mentioned this last week. The graphics are Xbox 360 level, and the sky boxes are PS1 level.
Oh, yeah.
But it does have... I actually had my guy going around at 4 o'clock, and like soon I started hearing roosters crowing. You know, the game goes with the details, so it may not have the greatest resolution or graphic fidelity, but it goes with all these details, like the roosters crowing, or the fact that when you say you're driving off a dirt road onto grass, some of the dirt will spill off onto the grass, something that you wouldn't even think they would notice. But here's really something really cool. I noticed that my tire tracks were not leaving the dirt fields, the dirt roads at all. They were staying there. So I was able to retrace my tracks several times just by looking at where I'd already been. So it goes for that level of detail. So the Xbox 360 graphics can be forgiven because it's doing so much more than just giving you a sharp resolution and high textures. You know, and the textures are fine. You know, they're not ugly, but they're also, you know, nowhere near what pushing the Xbox One X. But it is doing a lot of the stuff that is persistent, you know? Because think about it. I'm making tire tracks, and they're persistent in the game. And they don't always have to be in the same place. So it's going for that level of graphics. Low graphics, but very, very in-depth.
I wonder if their goal was that you would spend so much time marveling at what was happening with the graphics on the ground that you would never look up.
No, because there's nothing to marvel at in the game. You're basically harvesting wheat. Or at least that's what you're doing. The thing about Pure Farming is that it has an extensive tutorial mode. So this is basically for people who are just getting into the genre, because something like Farming Simulator, they just pop you in and say, okay, good luck. Oh, there'll be a tooltip occasionally. No, this one tells you exactly what to do. I just got to the point in which you can get quests from other farmers. And it looks like the first one I cannot turn down. And they're timed quests, too. They have to be done in 24 in-game hours. So, you know,
I would love if they went with the full-on authentic farming experience, and one of the quests was go to court against Monsanto.
I'm going
to
tell you something. There is a game that was announced, and I've been getting emails about it. It's called Seed, and it's spelled C-E-D-E, not S-E-E-D, and it's combat farming.
Combat farming?
Yep, combat farming. You're taking farming to a whole new level. So, yeah, I've been doing a lot of the, and also I got back into Shadow of War simply because I just wanted to, you know, do some stuff in it. And I started making a game by shaming each orc captain as much as possible before killing them, just to see how low they could go. You know, see if we can get them to one level, go all the way from 65 to 1. And seeing how long I could go without. Because here's the thing, when they get to like level 17, you can almost accidentally kill them because they have so many fatal weaknesses at that point.
Wow.
If they go maniac, though, they go right back up to 65 and become hard as hell. And the guys who get deranged are just... they haven't done any of the verbal deranges. They've gone into the... and I'm not exaggerating. That's how they sound. And one of the things about the game that makes it much more advanced than Shadow of Mordor is that you can hear them from far away. You know where they are because you can hear them... they can hear muttering, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's what the other thing I noticed early on when I was playing is that now, if you do something to a captain, one of the orcs may actually call him out by name. Oh, they've killed Scrag. You know, and you have to imagine there's like 100 names in that game, so they had to do voice work for 100 names and do variations on all of them, mm-hmm. depending on what was going on.
That's impressive.
So, anyway...
is that the same amount of names that they had to do for Fallout 4?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have my name. They had cursed names. They had fuckballs, as you could give them a name as in that game. Or shitface. But they didn't have Jonah.
I guess Jonah isn't as popular as some names.
It's not as popular as fuckball.
I guess not.
This annoyed me, you know?
Understandable.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to Gaming Flashback, and this week's Gaming Flashback is Super Mario Galaxy. Super Mario Galaxy is a 2007 platform video game developed and published by Nintendo for the Wii. It is the third 3D game in the Super Mario series. The game was re-released as a Nintendo Selects title in 2011 and as a download via Wii U's eShop in 2015. The story revolves around the protagonist, Mario, I don't know if you've heard of him yet, who is on a quest to rescue Princess Peach, because what else are they going to do with her, while simultaneously saving the universe from Bowser. Now, I will say there is one game in which Princess Peach is a protagonist, but her special ability is that she has emotional attacks. She can cry as a weapon. Thank you, Japan. Super Mario Galaxy is set in outer space while Mario...
I think you're forgetting Super Mario 2, where she was...
She was the other guy, she was not crying, if I remember correctly.
She was basically the best character in the game.
No, but I'm talking about her own game in which she's the protagonist, that only she's in it. And her special ability, she can cry at enemies, is one of her abilities.
Yeah, Japan doesn't seem to understand making strong female characters, or at least not Kendo.
But the idea of a strong female character is her armed with a sword.
Actually, they have Samus, so I don't understand. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Okay, continue on, sorry.
Yeah. Super Mario Galaxy is, guess what? It's set in outer space, where Mario travels through different galaxies to collect power stars, earned by completing missions, defeating a boss, or reaching a particular area. Each galaxy contains planetoids and orbiting structures for the players to explore. Each astronomical object has its own gravitational force, allowing the player to completely circumnavigate the planetoids, walking sideways or upside down. The player can usually jump from one independent object and fall towards another nearby. Although the main gameplay is in 3D, there are several areas in the game in which the player's movements are restricted to a two-dimensional plane. The player character is controlled via the Wii remote and the nunchuck. While most of Mario's abilities are taken directly from Super Mario 64, such as long jump, wall jump, and a variety of somersaults, a new feature is called the Star Pointer, which is a cursor that appears when the Wii remote pointer is pointed towards the screen. Essentially, the star pointer is used to pick up special Kompido-shaped objects called star bits, which then can be shot to stun enemies, manipulate obstacles, or feed hungry llamas. I almost said llamas. Maybe I'm thinking about SimCity. Star-shaped sentient beings which act as companions throughout the game. The pointer can also attach to small blue objects called pull stars, which can be utilized to pull Mario through space. If the player becomes encased in a floating bubble, the star pointer can be used to maneuver the bubble. Early into the game, the player learns a new ability known as the spin technique, which has the appearance in varying forms throughout the Super Mario franchise. In Super Mario Galaxy, the spin is primarily used for melee attacks, as it can stun enemies and shatter objects, and is used to trigger special propellers called Sling Stars or Launch Stars that launch Mario across large distances through space. The spin utility is also used for climbing vines, ice skating, unscrewing bolts, and for activating several power-ups. Other Wii Remote functions are available for smaller quests, such as surfing aboard a Manta Ray or balancing atop a large ball and rolling it through the obstacle course. By the end of the March 2017, Nintendo had sold 12.75 million copies of the game worldwide, making it the third best-selling non-bundled Wii game and the ninth best-selling game, a Nintendo-published game for the Wii. Super Mario Galaxy 2 sold 6 million. And you know why? Because it was basically Super Mario Galaxy, and they didn't do much changes, and people got bored quickly. But yeah, I mean, this was a big deal when it was released.
I enjoyed Super Mario Galaxy. Actually, it was because it was two-player. You could play it at the same time and have, like, an assistant player, and he would... I remember my friend would use his nunchuck to, like, do... sidestep to assist me as I was playing as Mario. I thought it was a pretty cool game.
Yeah, you could have someone collecting the star bits with the second player nunchuck while you were doing the work on Mario.
Arguably this was the last good Mario game. I mean, everything else was just basically Super Mario Brothers. Wii 1, 2, 3, the same 2D crap that you've played a million times before. And I would say the last good one, Odyssey.
I would say that it wasn't. I wouldn't say that it's not the last good one as much as it's the last crazy innovative one. It was.
Yeah.
It was really out of the ordinary for what Mario usually is, and that's kind of what made it so ridiculous. I mean, the gravity thing alone, jumping between planets, was enough to really set it apart. But It just had so many different things going on that you didn't normally see, that you didn't see into Mario games up to that point.
I liked the side-scrolling Marios because that I could play with my wife because she has 3D motion sickness and she couldn't play Mario Galaxy or Mario 64 or Mario Sunshine, but she could play the side-scrolling Super Mario games.
I think the thing that threw a lot of people about Super Mario Galaxy was the fact that It didn't orient itself to your screen. It oriented itself to whatever the strongest gravity was. So a lot of times it would be either Mario was upside down or on his side or whatever, and you had to adjust your brain to what he was doing because it wasn't going to right itself so that Mario was on the bottom of the screen. No. You had to envision what you're supposed to do. And that was the basic main thrust of the game. It was that it played with gravity and orientation and expectations, which is why it was really popular.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think Odyssey is probably the coolest Mario since Mario Galaxy.
I definitely like Odyssey. That is a cool game.
You know what? Odyssey does nothing really new, and it doesn't. It's Super Mario 64 except with a possession mechanic. That's it. You know,
which is great. I love being able to go inside.
The mechanic was better in Middle Earth: Shadow of War.
That's
a totally different game, Jonah.
And what do you think Mario does?
That's the same.
He doesn't
Mario
chop
doesn't
orcs
murder
into
people?
Pieces.
He jumps on tortoises. Do that in real life and see what happens to the tortoise. Not to mention, they made the mistake of putting him in with real people, so now you have this squat thing running around that's not human.
I think it's hilarious.
I think it's creepy.
Yeah, it's fun.
I would have been less creeped out if they had Bob Hoskins running around instead. And John Leguizamo.
I don't know. I think Mario Odyssey does everything it needs to, and it does it fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it hits the beats, make money, and do nothing really artistically better except copy Sonic. That's the worst crime of Super Mario Odyssey.
What part of Sonic did it copy? I've been watching a lot of Sonic games, and it looks nothing like Sonic.
It looks nothing like Sonic in that it's Mario and not Sonic. Have you not played any other 3D Sonic games? Seriously?
I've looked at a lot of the 3D Sonic games, and none of those games are doing what Mario Odyssey is doing. None of them have a hat that he spins and shoots out or takes possession of other
opponents.
No,
because Sonic does a spin dash.
So fucking what?
You know, I could really piss off dash. Scott by saying, who cares about East, and we're not going to do that news
item. Dash. I don't know.
Hey, you know, look, I am not one of the converted, okay? I mean...
That's fine. But it is a good game.
Yeah, you're entitled to your wrong opinion.
Anyways. We're going to move on to the first game item. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Atari reveals Atari Box, renamed Atari VCS, from Game Informer. Back in June 2017, Atari CEO Fred Chesnas...
No, Chenet. It's a French name.
My bad. Atari CEO Fred Chenet teased a new console, reportedly using Linux as its OS. General manager...
That is so Scottish, it's wearing a kilt, that name. Fyrke McCunelag. So anyways, I'll just say his name and you can continue on. Fyrgil McCunelag.
Go ahead. You butchered it as bad as I was going to.
Fyrgil McCunelag.
General manager.
McConnell.
Scottish crap. Although I will find it very funny that a Frenchman has a name Fred. I mean, yeah, Frederick, but still.
But he stated at the time, "We wanted to create a killer TV product where people can game, stream, and browse with as much freedom as possible, including accessing pre-owned games from other content providers." The company has announced that the Atari Box has been renamed to the Atari VCS.
By the way, before people started calling the Atari 2600 the Atari 2600, its name was the Atari VCS.
Huh. That's a nice little callback. More details on the console's capabilities will be disclosed at this week's Game Developers Conference in San Francisco. In the meantime, the console is now accompanied with a modernized joystick and sleek controller reminiscent to Xbox One's button layout and build. COO of Connected Devices, Michael Arts, said, "With the Atari VCS name, we know how important it is to get everything completely right, and that's why we briefly paused an imminent launch late last year." Pardon. "It was a difficult decision with the countdown underway, but we weren't willing to go forward with even one thing out of alignment. The company is showing off the Atari VCS, classic joystick, and modern controller prototypes to the press this week at GDC. And it is working with game developers, content creators, and other partners to finalize details. In April, Atari will announce a pre-order date for the Atari VCS. Earlier, Atari canceled a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo because of its development hit a snag. A pre-order date for the Atari VCS will be announced sometime in April."
So it looks beautiful, but here's the problem I have. What about the games?
I think that's what everybody's been asking. What games are they going to do? What kind of games? I'm very interested to see.
Here's the thing. If they're going with a Linux OS, it indicates to me... It just reminds me of the Ouya too much, which used the Android. I mean, they're definitely going for something that you can play on your TV. But... what? I mean, you can bet your bottom dollar that I'm pretty sure it'll have a ROM chip that has every single Atari 2600 game ever released. Mm-hmm. Or at least 100 and some odd, like those Atari, you know, those Atari mini consoles. But it sounds to me that they're coming up with an original content, but it's not going to be something like Skyrim. It doesn't sound like they're going for that. You know, I wonder if it's going to be sort of like faux 1632-bit games. And if they're original games, I'm all in. I would love to see original games, you know.
I hope they're original.
But if it's just going to be the highlights of 120 Atari 2600 games, or 5200 games, or 7800 games, I played them already.
I wonder if it's going to be sort of like a Steam machine where you can access
That's the problem. I don't want a Steam machine. I'm not going to play Civ 6 on that thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they have... Now, for those of you who can't see the picture, the console looks beautiful. It has a faux wood finish in the front. and it sort of looks like the back end of a speaker, the side of a speaker with a forward. But the controllers are great. The controller, one controller is basically the Xbox One controller. You know, same layout, except it has a nice little red and black motif. And the other one is sort of like a, like they took the original 2600 joystick and just made it look like it was in Tron Legacy.
It's really interesting because you have a very drastic difference of controllers here. You have a controller that has all these buttons and joysticks on it, and then you have a controller that's very basic, back to the basics of a joystick and a button.
Yeah,
so
the old 8-pin
there's going to be
joystick.
Some very simple games, I think.
Which tells me that they're going to have Atari 2600 games available for the system, because Atari 2600, you had a joystick, you had one button, that was it.
That's not a bad thing, but I mean, having an Xbox controller seems to indicate that they're going to go for new content that can go beyond their original designs.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. When I'm playing something like Ms. Pac-Man, I don't care what kind of, if I'm using the Elite gamepad or the Xbox One gamepad or whatever, it doesn't feel right. When you have that joystick, the single joystick with a single button, then it feels really good. And it controls a lot better. Again, it tells me that they're going to go with, they're going to have the 2600, 5200, whatever. No, actually not. Because here's the thing about the 5200 and the 7800, they had more buttons on their gamepads.
See, the thing is, they've already released Atari boxes with their old games that you could play on the TV.
Yeah,
so this needs to be more than that.
You know what I want? I want a paddle, damn it. Because I want a paddle so you can play Tempest the way it's supposed to be played.
Mm. With the little roll wheel?
Yeah, it's not a roll wheel.
The turn wheel. That worked well with Warlords. That was a really good one.
Kaboom. Remember Kaboom? That was, the gamepad was great. And then you have the, he had the other controllers too. You know, they had a really good driving wheel complete with pedal for the Atari 2600. Oh no, that was a ColecoVision. Now I'm getting confused. That was the ColecoVision that had the driving wheel. But actually, the paddle was used for driving games too. And the thing that they did with that was they took a paddle and they had a special version of the paddle which had a steering wheel instead of the paddle. There's a little handheld steering wheel that was a paddle in the controller. So yeah, let's cross our fingers about this because, you know, pre-orders are in April, but I want more information, damn it. I want to know what games are on it because I don't care how pretty the game is, how pretty the console is. There has to be something attached to it. I will say this, though. The console is pretty small. If I'm going with how the 2600 controller was and gamepads are, that's... It's two game pads long and one and a half game pads wide. So it's not exactly a large console.
Uh-uh. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be able to compete with PlayStation or
I don't think
Xbox.
It's intended to, though.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
So, well, you know what? If it's $99, which I doubt because of the controllers.
That'd be very big incentive
Those controllers are going to probably cost, you know, so I'd say $125, then I would go for it. You know, because with these type of consoles, you just put it in your book bag, take it with you wherever. You know, it's sort of like a party thing.
I think they're also going to have ability for stuff like Netflix, YouTube, Hulu, and all that stuff,
yeah,
too.
I mean, I already have my other consoles for that. That's not a big
deal. Yeah, I know. But they seem to want... I don't know what corner of the market they want.
I'd love to see them try web browsing with this thing.
Too vague. Yeah. Yeah, we need more details.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. East Memories of Calcutta will arrive on PC this summer, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. Localization studio Exceed Games has been churning out PC versions of much-loved JRPGs in recent years, including a few games in the East series and recently The Legend of Heroes, Trials of Cold Steel 2. Trials of Cold Steel 2? Wasn't it supposed to be a Trials of Legend of Heroes 3?
Yeah, that one came out already.
Okay. With one or two exceptions, it's done a stellar job, and it's just revealed its next target, East Memories of Calcutta. I wonder, was Exceed responsible for the Tales of games?
I think so, yeah. It was Falcom and Exceed.
They had that one disastrous, port. That was their one really bad game. and it was the one that everybody wanted. Anyways, this game originally came to PS Vita in 2012, and the PC version made it to China in 2015, but never to the West. This part will have unlocked frame rate and support resolutions of 2080p and higher. Expect all things that our XSEED does well, including reworked visuals and control rebinding options. Memories of Calcutta is basically, or is it Calcetta, is basically the official version of Ys 4. It's actually the third iteration of an Ys 4 game, but the previous two weren't made by series creator Nihon Falcom. God, you know, Nihon Falcom have been around forever. I think they were started in the 70s. So this is the one that'll be considered canon. To confuse matters, the events of Memories of Calcutta sit between Ys 2 and 3, which is why I was asking Scott if he had finished Ys 2 and 3. The real question is, will it arrive before the PC port of Ys 8, Lacrimosa of Dana? Dana is due out in April, but it has been delayed several times, and as I'm pretty sure Scott knows very well.
Yeah, I think the Calcutta one will come out first, and I'm definitely looking forward to that. It'll bridge my continuity playing very well, but I don't know when that Lacrimosa of Dana is going to come out. I guess they have some serious issues to look into, and if they're having to remake the thing as opposed to porting this Calcutta, that one they might be having a lot easier time of porting than the Lacrimosa of Dana. So that one might be on hold until they figure out their issues. But I'm looking forward to Calcutta, yes.
TJ, have you played the Ys games?
No, not at all.
Okay. I have not, but I've seen them from afar for years and years and years. Back on the original NES. Was it the NES they started on or the Super Nintendo? I just remember
They started on the Sega. I think it was Sega or the...
Right.
Or yeah, it was Sega.
Doing 8-bit system or 16-bit system.
Yeah, Wanderers of Wise was the only one that showed up on SNES. The TurboGrafx, I think, even had it. And the Sega Genesis had it. Or the Nintendo Master System had Ys. They never went to Nintendo.
Here's the thing. One of the things I loved doing when I got a video game magazine was looking at the ads. The ads were the best part to me because it was sort of like what's coming next. You know, and I always saw the Ys ads. It's like, oh, that's interesting. It's a game with two letters for a name. I remember seeing Ultima on the NES advertisement and say, oh, really? And it looked pretty good. It looked better than the Commodore 64 version I had of Ultima 3. Not that I was going to play it, but I was sort of like, oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting port to do. I think the Ultima games heavily influenced Japanese RPGs, at least the turn-based ones, because if you ever look at them, they have the same exact mechanics as Ultima. All of them. They took all their mechanics from the Ultima series, and then they ran with it after. And, you know, what happens is Western audiences got tired of the Ultima format, but the Japanese company said, no, we like this format, we're going to continue it, we like this top down you know, and we're going to make it isometric. And as the technology went around, it became more and more 3D, you know, but they still all had the same, you know.
Good. Did you like the food, Daddy?
Yes. Good.
So
I'm recording.
Here's a question for you, Scott.
Yeah?
Do you remember the old NES RPGs that came when Ultima started it?
Yeah, I played Ultima 4, I think it was on the SNES, or NES, sorry.
Yeah, they didn't call it Ultima 4, though. They called it something else. They called Ultima something-something.
Oh, what, the Virtues? It was the Virtues 1.
Virtues of the Avatar? Something.
Yeah, Virtues of the Avatar, I believe.
Let me check.
And, I would be playing Dragon Warrior and Final Fantasy. I'm trying to remember what other RPGs were on NES.
Yeah, it was called Quest of the Avatar.
Yeah. It was a simple name.
Yeah. Well, Ultima 3 was called Ultima Exodus. That was the name of the... Anyway, mm-hmm. It was Ultima 3 Exodus on Commodore 64. So, do you know anything about Ys 2, this new Ys game coming?
Well, yeah, I looked at a video of it fighting,
someone playing it, and it looked like there's skills in there. You have your companion that looks like he's you have a fighting companion as you're fighting, and I haven't seen too much other than, you know, some of the it looks good, obviously.
Let me ask you a question. So, how many of the East games have you already played? I mean, not the reboots on PC. I just mean what's it called originally.
Originally was just Wanderers of Wise because it was I only had SNES and NES consoles, so it was only Wanderers of Wise when I was a kid.
So
and I enjoyed it, but
up.
apparently the SNES Wanderers of Wise is the most hated version of Ease. they everybody hates it, but I loved it as a kid. That was the only one I got. So
well, here's
that was,
the thing:
I loved
you're playing the original East games now. Do you see why they didn't like it?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't get it. It was fine. I enjoyed it. I honestly hate the bump mechanic. It's stupid. I hate it. It's lazy. I just don't like it. And it's in the first two games. And you have to go through it. If you want to play, you have to do the bump mechanic where you bump, bump, bump into enemies instead of actually slashing at them. So every wise
oh,
after that.
Oh yeah, I forgot about slash. That with some JRPGs. You didn't attack them, you just bumped into them.
Yeah, that was just Ease. That's the only one I've seen that in. I've never seen that anywhere else.
I've seen it in some others.
I guess some, but all right. I mean, it's funny. I seem to like the hated ones. I love Castlevania II, Simon's Quest. I loved Link's Awakening.
Well,
I loved. Why
yeah, well, Simon's Quest isn't hated because of the game itself. It's hated because you needed to call the Nintendo hotline in order to progress in the game because of the...
That was one of the reasons, yes. A lot of people, I think, felt it was too easy.
Anyway.
I mean, other than the stupid puzzles, it was too easy.
We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, hold on. What? It's loading. Okay, so I gotta scroll. Okay, Fortnite is already the second highest grossing game on iOS. This is from Game Informer. Fortnite on mobile has only started releasing invites to early access, but it's already a huge success. Along with topping the App Store chart as the top free game, Fortnite has already hit the number 2 spot for the top grossing games on Apple products. Candy Crush Saga still clings to the top overall spot, but Fortnite has surpassed games like Clash of the Clans, Clash Royale, and Pokemon Go on its way up the ladder. According to Apple iTunes chart, the Battle Royale behemoth is the fourth highest grossing app throughout the entire App Store, only eclipsed by Netflix, Pandora, and Candy Crush Saga. Fortnite's popularity continues to grow as the game makes its way onto more and more platforms, prompting Epic Games to announce Party Royale as a celebrity-focused event that will take place in Los Angeles during E3.
Hey, Scott. TJ, do you think we can get into that?
Into what?
Into Party Royale. We're going to be there.
I mean, enough to
attend Party Royale?
I mean... I might because I'm. We're covering this on a regular basis because we do a lot of esports at Twin Galaxies.
Oh,
but,
that's right. I was thinking about Game Watcher, but yeah. Well, if you do, plus one me.
I'll see what they
plus
can
one
do.
Me. I want to see what's going to be like. So you know what? It blows my. You know what? The only thing that blows my mind more than this is the fact that Candy Crush Saga is the number one game app on iOS. But you, TJ, you played a lot of Fortnite. Mm-hmm. Do you think it would translate to iOS?
I didn't.
No, because there's a lot of buttons and functions.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest issues that PUBG had when it was moving over to consoles was making it intuitive. That said, I guess they figured it out. And it's... It's working well enough.
1 million of in-app purchases during the first 3 days.
Fortnite is taking over the world.
I like that it's giving Candy Crush a run for its money. That definitely needs to be taken down a notch.
Fortnite is taking over the world. What this doesn't tell you is that not only is it one of the highest selling things on iOS, it also beat out games like Counter-Strike and Dota 2 on Steam, and it took over and it beat out League of Legends on Twitch viewing.
We discussed streaming. That last week. We already talked about how it had 6,000 people watching, but that's on PC. You know, this is on iOS, and we're talking about a shooter. A third-person shooter on iOS.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
I mean...
It's absurd. Like, I've never seen a game get as much traction in such a short amount of time as Fortnite has. And I'm talking about...
More insane? Uh-huh. I think is going to be testing cross-platform multiplayer. Which means you're going to have people playing on PC versus console versus iOS.
Yes. And thank God for a button that turns it off if you don't want to be if you want to play on mobile but don't want to play with people on a console or PC.
At least that has baked in support for mouse and keyboard on mobile.
That defeats the purpose. I mean, the point of being mobile is to not need that.
Yeah, but at the same time, you can totally get a mini USB controller for your iPad or device.
Well, here's the thing. I'm thinking of sort of like people who play Fortnite on their laptop. It's that sort of mobile, you know, in which you pick up your iPad, you take it someplace, you get your internet connection, and boom, you're playing Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not in your home. So it's not like, you know, you're on the train doing something. It's more like you're in another office, or you're visiting a friend, you know, and they want you to show your mad Fortnite skills. But here's the thing, you know, this is the sort of thing that makes people want to get a keyboard and mouse for their iPad.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm shocked that it came to... I mean, it was announced for mobile only weeks ago. Like, not even. And I'm shocked that it came out on mobile before it came out on Switch. But I do know that eventually, like, it's got to, right? It's got to at some point land on Switch, because then the circle will be complete and hell will come. And
so let's. I'm going to do the next item because this is related. Top Fortnite streamer Ninja earns $500,000 a month. And this comes to us from VG247. In a recent interview with news network CNBC, professional streamer Ninja revealed that he earns about $500,000 in revenue per month from his streams and partnerships. Professional Twitch streamer Ninja began streaming on the side around 10 years ago when he worked a job and studied in college. Since then, he's built up a following that allows him to stream full-time and never have to worry about money again. Ninja says that much of his income is from Amazon and Twitch Prime subscribers, but he also earns money from ad revenue generated by his 5 million subscribers on YouTube. On top of that, Ninja's following on Twitter is climbing, particularly after he recently streamed a game of Fortnite with rapper Drake, and he also has 1 million followers on Instagram. His secret? First, you have to be really good at Fortnite. That game's growing popularity, coupled with Ninja's prowess, meant that players flock to watch his high-level plays unfold. Then there's the fact he keeps his viewers entertained at the same time. Hopefully he doesn't make racial slurs when playing, like a certain streamer we know and dislike.
Yeah. are we talking about Dr. Disrespect?
I think we're talking about someone who's a pie, but it's sort of a shit pie.
Oh. See, I had the wrong one. There's a bunch of them, it turns out. But
now, here's the thing I'm going to say right now. You know, it doesn't translate. Don't expect them to be on TV, because no one will care. You know? Don't expect them to do anything else except this. I think they're learning that fame on YouTube and on Twitch does not translate to TV, movies, or anything like that. So we're not going to see his version of Fred.
What?
Fred the movie with Lucas Cruikshank. Woohoo!
The most likely scenario of advancement for this is esports.
Yeah. I would say esports, probably, you know, ESPN as a commentator, but someone on the floor like Michelle Beadle.
Why would he need to go to TV or movies if he's getting $500,000 a month?
It doesn't translate, Scott, because I'm going to give you a little secret. Those people are not going to follow him.
I don't think you understood what I just said. Oh. Why would he care about going to TV? Yeah.
Here's the problem, though, for him, and I hope he's smart in saving that money, because video games are very, very, very volatile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
And Fortnite may be yesterday's news not even 2 years from now, but 1 year from now, when the next big thing comes out. He'd better be able to adapt quickly to that new thing, or just, you know. But on the other hand, esports, you know, I'm pretty sure Fortnite is going to be an esports staple for like 2 years, 3 years. And he'll be able to make money not playing, but actually announcing.
That's the thing about Battle Royale games, is that nobody has put together the model for an esports arena for it yet, because there's so many sporadic elements to it.
You know, what I would do is I would stress up I can't believe I forgot the name of the movie. And not Battle Royale. The Hunger Games. I would stress up the Hunger Games and have everybody dressed as characters from the Hunger Games, or the announcers being dressed as the government, you know, people.
Yeah, and to that note, I think that games like... Okay, so I do know for a fact that H1Z1, which is not quite as popular, but they are getting an esports event ready for this coming April. They are doing the H1Z1 Pro League, and they've got a bunch of teams signed on, and they're going to be doing it big in Las Vegas.
Yeah, well, you know what's going to make any esport big, and make him still be able to do this, is if they start having heavy betting on esports in Vegas.
Yeah, they have a lot of big names, and there are a lot of major teams that I know of. They're the first major attempt in doing a esports season with a battle royale game, and I'm willing to bet money that if it works, if H1Z1 Pro League is successful, then Epic will jump right on board with their own version for Fortnite. Because if there's anything that Epic is good at, it's taking other people's ideas and running with them.
Well, here's the problem with PUBG. The real problem with PUBG, the matches are like an hour long. And that is impossible for you to work into an esport, or even just something that's televisable. You can do it with something like Dota, because they have such rabid fans, and League of Legends, they have such rabid fans that they're going to watch no matter what, and there's millions of people who are going to watch. But this sort of thing is sort of brand new, and they're sort of like having the idea of trying to get the mainstream. And I mean, something like Injustice 2 can easily translate, because, hey, look, you have DC superheroes and villains fighting each other. What's not to get about that?
You know? I think Fortnite translates a little better than you might think.
I didn't say it didn't. I just say it needs. You need to hype up the Hunger Games with it.
Right, and I also just think that you need to build like the Epic. Oh yeah, and every developer of a battle royale that has any dream of making it into an esport, they need to create a sort of standardized form that can be used for a tournament play, where everybody is either on the same level, or at least has the same chance of winning.
You know what's really sad is that this wasn't happening when Epic first released Unreal Tournament back in 1999.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I mean, Unreal Tournament still beats all of those games, in my opinion, in terms of pure gameplay. And if you have the one-hit kills, you know, I forgot what they're called. But there was a special game mode in which everybody had a laser weapon that would be an instant kill. It was insta-jib. You know, and not only did it kill you, it made you explode, your parts explode, which is my favorite thing when playing with bots. It was sort of, like, so fun. And that was the other thing. The bots in Unreal Tournament were great. I when I made a map and I did the path nodes, I would put in zero human players, and just watch the bots play amongst each other. And just watch them, when they started approaching a corner, they'd slow down and they would hunch over like a real person would, expecting to see if someone was coming around the other side. It was so great to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, cool. I don't know what happened, because when they made Unreal Tournament for the PS3 and Xbox 360, it sucked. The magic was lost.
Yeah.
I don't know what they changed.
Yeah, and like, I think, what was the last one? It was Unreal Tournament 2004, right?
No, that was the last one of the original series. The last one, if you're talking about the original games, 2004, yeah. But I'm thinking about the Xbox 360 PS3 versions.
Mm.
Which was released in, I think, like 2009, 2010. Something like that.
Yeah. I think a part of it is that, like, I don't know.
Here's the thing, you know, now I'm remembering, you know, the AI sucked, which was shocking to me. But also, it wasn't pure, you know? I mean, when you played the original Unreal Tournament, it was like, okay, you're in this room, everybody has a weapon, go for it. I mean, who doesn't remember Two Towers?
Yeah.
Sniper's Paradise.
And then unfortunately for them, Cliff Bleszinski ended up moving on.
Yeah. And then he came back, and then he moved on again.
And then he did Lawbreakers, and we all know... Well, do we know how that went?
I watched a video on Lawbreakers about the death of that game. And here's the dirty little secret about Lawbreakers. It was really well made. It was super well made. But Cliffy had to open his mouth. He had to talk too much. He had to talk shit about Overwatch, and he had to talk shit about the competition. Even as he was praising him, he talked shit about them. He had to just close his mouth, release it as a free game, went with microtransactions, and people that would have had a better audience.
Yeah, I agree.
Because when it was released, it was like, oh, Lawbreakers was released? Okay. And forgotten the same day.
You can't go up against the king.
You can't charge $60 for it. Anyways, this also makes me sad because I'm thinking, you know, all I'm doing is podcasts and public access shows all about video games, and he's making $500,000 a month playing them.
All you need to do is find the game that is going to attract millions of people.
I don't
become
think
literally the
do that.
Become literally the best at it. And then stream up until the point where enormous stars like Drake take notice and want to chill with you.
I would have to do it naked. By the way, you may not know this, but I've been doing this entire podcast naked.
Oh.
So yeah, this is going
to
be
for some YouTubers that seems to be Minecraft. So there are some YouTube Minecraft players that have millions of followers.
Yeah, and also one or two for Stardew Valley. But usually they're girls who wear low-cut tops. And they don't even have to be thin, you know. Sort of chunky, but just as long as you have massive boobs, they're going to watch. If all they see is your face and your boobs.
Well, whatever gets viewers, I guess.
Yeah, I can't do that. I don't want my breasts to get too big. You know, there's a game coming out, and I wonder how popular it's going to be, especially as a streaming game, but also as maybe an eSport, and that's Them's Fighting Herds.
Them's Fighting Herds?
Yeah, it's Little Pony Fighting, but they, of course, because of rights, of course, they had to make ersatz versions of all the characters. So yeah, Them's Fighting Herds is a fan-made My Little Pony fighting game.
That sounds horrible.
It's that actually sounds like the antithesis of what that show's about.
But, well, hey, look, you know, you have creepypastas in which Pinkie Pie turns out to be a serial killer. And the worst part is when I watch the show, it's like, yeah, Pinkie Pie seems to be a serial killer. I would not be surprised if she butchered everybody. And, you know, she just has that kind of personality in which she's like Harley Quinn, except she hasn't stuck a gun in anybody's face yet.
The My Little Pony fandom is such a weird fandom.
Well, but here's the thing. It's getting playtested a lot, so whatever comes out of it, it's going to be pretty good, you know, in terms of being
a fandom,
in terms of being of the characters. You know, one thing about bronies that I actually appreciate is that when they do fandom stuff, you know, fanfic or, you know, whatever, it's not like Rogue One, in which you can say, oh, yeah, that's a fan thing. No, they actually know the characters, and they don't do any Mary Sues about them. You know, they actually know why the characters are doing what they're doing. You know, the character motivations. And even in the creepypastas, you know, you can see, oh, yeah, that's what they would do, actually, and how they would act. Because, you know, I already said this with, you see, I don't know if any of our listeners, but Paul gave me the My Little Pony Challenge to watch on Netflix all the episodes of My Little Pony. So I've got to know the characters. It's not something
if
I would, you know, go out of my way to watch, you know. So I guess I'm not a brony. But I understand the characters, and I understand them, and the fact that everything about it is very anti-formulaic. You have the formula, oh, and there's a twist in terms of formula. You know, they do things that you don't expect, but say, oh, actually, that's the right thing. That's what would happen.
Mm.
So I'm just saying the fans understand this. So you don't have a glorified fan film like Rogue One. you know, in which you can just see the Star Wars fans masturbating to. Oh, look, it's AT-AT walkers. It's Star Destroyers. It's Darth Vader. It's Princess Leia. It's a CGI Grand Moff Tarkin, who's even worse than CGI Leia.
I should have known that this was a long roundabout way for Jonah to be mad about Star Wars.
Apparently.
I'm not mad at it. I'm mocking it. I have to care first to be mad at it. That Han Solo film looks awful. I mean, just leave Chris Miller and Lord on it, damn it. They know
granted,
what they're doing.
Look awful.
What?
Granted, it does look awful, which is why I'll wait until about maybe two or three weeks after the movie is out, when somebody makes a supercut of just Lando Calrissian parts.
What I'm loving is that Disney is making people pine for prequels now. And I think they're idiots for that. At least these have human beings who know how to talk in them. They do not have that in the prequels. You have robots who are talking about sand in the prequels. Jar Jar Binks, like, to me is the least worst part of the prequels. He's not bad at all. He has a character motivation I can understand.
I want a buddy Jedi cop movie with Obi-Wan Kenobi and Mace Windu.
Oh, because well, if guess the what? Fandom... There is something for you. It's called The Clone Wars.
Well, I guess I could watch that then.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched it, but from what I understand, it takes the garbage from the prequels and actually turns them into something watchable and intelligent.
Well,
and
that's
it shows
good.
What the prequels didn't show, and that was Obi-Wan teaching Anakin, and Anakin having friends. Did you
notice
that?
In all those movies,
he had no friends. His best friend was a cartoon rabbit and two robots.
You're talking about the Genndy Tartakovsky animated series, yeah?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Genndy Tartakovsky knows what he's doing.
Yes. Yes, he does.
And the thing is that a lot of people are heartbroken that Sony didn't go ahead with his Popeye film. He released a concept film, and everybody loved it. Sony said, no, we want you to make another Hotel Transylvania.
Well, that's a shame.
I don't know if it's on YouTube, but if you can, go to Genndy Tartakovsky Popeye to see what he was going to do. And here's the thing about him, and I know we're getting way off topic now, but Genndy Tartakovsky wants cartoons to act like cartoons, you know, to take advantage of their movement and their slapstick. You know, he's basically the modern version of not Jed Clampett, but...
Tex Avery?
Yeah, he worships at the table of Tex Avery. He's not as surreal as Tex Avery, but he does have the same movement and the same action as a Tex Avery, you know, using the medium to tell a story rather than just telling a story on the medium, you know. So, yeah, anybody listening, do yourselves a favor. Look up Genndy Tartakovsky. And by the way, for some reason, his first name has two N's in it. Genndy and Popeye. And you'll see what could have been. And then go rent Food Fight, just for the hell of it. Which has nothing to do with Genndy Tartakovsky. It's just an experience that'll make the room look like Annie Hall.
I guess for me, my favorite kind of cartoons are Avatar, Last Airbender, and Gargoyles.
Mm. That's good.
You know what? I was also playing XCOM 2, and you know, I was thinking it's a TNG reunion, but it's not a TNG reunion. It's a Gargoyles reunion. Because you have Jonathan Frakes, you have Marina Sirtis, you have Michael Dorn. Well, you also have John DeLancey and Denise Crosby, too. But it's sort of like I expect Terra from the Deep to hire Patrick Stewart next.
Man. Now you just made me sad because I just remembered that Gargoyles never really ended. They just sort of stopped.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Eh.
I prefer that to an ending sometimes. Didn't they do that with Sonic 2?
Sort of.
The second Sonic, in which you just stopped and the villain's eyes were there and that's all you saw. Oh, series over.
They, The worst part is that I've seen some stuff about what the creative directors had in mind for going forward, and I really would have liked to see it play out.
Oh, well, remember when David Gator released what was going to happen in Half-Life 2 Episode 3?
Mm-hmm.
Except he gender-swapped everybody. Or, here's the thing, or would you rather have an ending like Dinosaurs?
No, I mean, I'm aware of, like, what I'm aware of, especially in this day and age, the dangers of re-releasing or remaking or rebooting series. Mm. I don't know. I just also sort of think that it would be cool to see what somebody else did, or even the original creators decided to do if they could actually get the chance to actually put it back together.
That Netflix Castlevania cartoon that was really good.
That was
really good.
Anyways.
So I think it's possible.
We're going to have to have a cartoon topic sometime. We should have a cartoon topic talking about the original Powerpuff Girls and how they screwed it all up. Let's talk about Powerpuff Girls 2016.
Or, like, I mean, in general, how there needs to be another What a Cartoon Show, because that thing spawned so many good series.
Well, let's see. Dexter's Laboratory, Samurai Jack, Courage the Cowardly Dog, Johnny Bravo,
Powerpuff Girls, Johnny Bravo, Cow and Chicken, which was the most twisted thing.
Oh, and also, of course, Michael Dorn in I Am Weasel. I am Weasel!
Yes.
I just love that, because here's the thing, the red guy appeared in both Cow and Chicken and I Am Weasel.
Mm-hmm.
And he never walked with his hands at his feet. He always walked with his butt cheeks.
Yes.
Because that was funny. Because he was walking with his butt cheeks.
and their traditional Friday night dinner was pork butts and taters.
I also like Cow and Chicken, yummy. Especially because it was... You were thinking, well, their parents can't be biological. Ho, 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 ho. Well, guess what? They are biological children. Eat on that, kiddies. And try not to think about the implications.
didn't they revealed in one episode that mom and dad just don't have upper halves?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that was one of the episodes. It was that kind of show, folks. And I was surprised to see that it's gotten mostly negative reviews. I don't understand that at all. Oh, I forgot Ed, Edd, and Eddie. Which, by the way, did get a great conclusion with the final movie.
It
turns out that Eddie's Ed's father, Ed's brother was a dick. But I always knew that. If you ever watch the show closely, Ed idolized his brother, but he would always add these little off lines about, you know, that made you think, oh God, he's terrible, he's abusive.
Yeah.
And it did not surprise me one bit to know that the creators said it was, you know, partially based in real life. It was that. But at least the Eds got finally accepted by the... Although, poor Plank. And his mind was broken and he became a supervillain. I forgot his name. All I remember is his name, Plank. Johnny?
Was it Johnny? Yeah, Johnny 2x4.
Yeah. No, I'm saying... The kid's name was Johnny, though, right?
Yeah, the kid's name was Johnny 2x4.
Yeah. By the way, we're going to end on this. My favorite character in Ed, and Eddie was Rolf, because he was just so batshit and crazy. He was Balky, except times 20.
I liked Jimmy, because Jimmy was like... He was a product of Eddie's mentoring, and he just became this evil genius hidden behind a little wimp that was just like, screw you over so hardcore if you crossed him.
He never took off those braces. Actually, I liked Ed Double... I liked... wait a minute. Damn it. Double D, of course, was the smart one.
Ed was the dumb one.
Yeah, so and I Eddie always liked was the Ed ringleader. Of the three... Because he wasn't as dumb as he seemed. I always loved the fact that he was super protective of Sarah, even when she was being abusive to him.
Yeah.
Anyways. Scott, did you watch Ed, Edd, and Eddy?
No, I did not.
You see, there's your edumacation that you have to start. Here's the thing that I
watched
about
the show.
I watched
plenty of cartoons. That one just didn't interest me.
Well, here's the thing about it, though. It was like Muppet Babies. It wasn't about anything except kids in a neighborhood, and it didn't try to be anything but kids in a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. It wasn't like Kids Next Door. I didn't watch that. I knew Super Spy Kids. Okay.
That was, I mean, it start. That was another one that started on What a Cartoon Show, but it began as Kenny and the Chimp.
Yeah. So here's my secret shame. I have not watched more than one episode of Adventure Time. I have not watched any of Gravity Falls. I've just been.
I hear
busy.
Gravity Falls.
At some
good.
Point, I will.
Yeah, Gravity Falls. I need to watch too.
And you know, I had to admire Gravity Falls. It went two seasons, and they said, "Okay, that's it. We told our story. We don't need to tell it anymore. We're not going to be like SpongeBob. We're not going to be like The Simpsons. We're not going to be like Family Guy. We're just going to end it after two seasons."
That's what The Last Airbender did as well. They did their story, and then they ended it.
Yeah, but they still did a spinoff.
The spinoff was good, too, though.
The spinoff was good, yeah, but...
They were end-capping the whole Avatar concept, because they had started with the Air Nation, been decimated by the Fire Nation, and they wanted to show the inverse of that, where the Fire Nation was good now, and now you have bad guys from air, bad guys from earth, and bad guys from water, and they wanted to just show like a more enriched world, or more balanced, and you know, there was bad guys in every nation and good guys in every nation.
Yeah, I haven't
and
watched
it wasn't
any of Avatar either.
Like,
you know,
hmm?
I haven't watched anything of Avatar either. All I know about it is what I absorbed from you know, a cultural osmosis. So I know what it's about, and I know what's involved with it.
Yeah, they told a specific story. They weren't just milking it, you know. They were trying to tell a story, and I think they finished it, you know. And
I also know how to make fans of the show really angry is just to mention M. Night Shyamalan's name.
Yeah.
So
I have friends who actually built a certain portion of their artistic careers on doing stuff with Korra when that was popular.
Well, let me ask you a question. Which do you think was worse, the Dragon Ball Z movie or the Last Airbender movie?
Dragon Ball Z movie
Last
by far.
Last Airbender.
Ah,
I would say Last Airbender.
So that's what we're going to do. Next time we're going to have a debate. We're going to have TJ and Scott debating which movie was worse. The Last Airbender or Dragon Ball Z. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. We'll also hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Shugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. And hopefully we'll have a big, long discussion about bad adaptations of cartoons.
Sounds good to me, and happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Take care. Play games, y'all.